last one for me. We couldn't exactly see you on the stream, but did you end up breakdancing in the corner?
I don't know if you'd call it breakdancing. I got to get some lessons. I mean, I get on the mat and like I'm down on the mat and maybe doing a worm type motion when I'm looking for a pin and that stuff. But there was no breakdance. I said I'm saving that till March 20th, Saturday night. I'm sharpening up my skills and then I'll break them out. I'll break them out Saturday night at national tournament.
I'll hold you to that.
So Doug Schwab may not have done any headstands or did any breakdancing, but dang it if he wasn't still fired up from when it came to seeing his guys compete this weekend. And it was honestly really fun to see him jazzed up like that, especially after the Panthers' hot start to the 2021 season. Hey, what's up? Hello, everybody. Welcome to In the Room, a wrestling podcast from the Des Moines Register. I'm Cody Goodwin, the Register's wrestling writer, and I am glad you're here. Welcome to the Weekend Freestyle. It's Monday, January 11th. We got a lot of wrestling to catch up on from this past weekend. Northern Iowa opened its season with two impressive victories over Big 12 opponents at that. Iowa State improved to 3-0 with lopsided wins over both Loras and Nebraska Kearney. And then we had quite an eventful weekend in Iowa high school wrestling as well, with Class 3A's top-ranked Waverly Shell Rock and second-ranked Southeast Polk highlighting the Hempstead duels in Dubuque. And then we had the two other number one-ranked teams, West Delaware and 2A Don Bosco and 1A. They were both competing at a loaded tournament at Benton Community. But let's start this week's freestyle with Northern Iowa. The Panthers went to Brookings, South Dakota this weekend for a tri-meet. They got to wrestle South Dakota State and North Dakota State, and they won them both. They toppled the Jackrabbits 28-13 and then turned right around and beat the Bison 27-11. They won 13 out of 20 total contested matches between the two duels. They registered 5 pins and a major decision along the way. 5 wrestlers went 2-0. 5 wrestlers registered wins in both duels. Brody Teske at 125 pounds, Tristan Lair at 149, Pat Schoenfelter at 165, Lance Runyon at 174, and Keegan Moore at 184. Both Kyle Biscaglia and Jax Goodlarzic got a match at 133. Both of them won their matches. Doug also split matches at heavyweight. He let John McConkie wrestle against South Dakota State. He came up a little short, but then he inserted Carter Isley, the veteran, against North Dakota State, and he registered the fastest pin of his career. One of the 5 very exciting season debut for the Schwab Mob. The win over South Dakota State, a little bit of revenge for the Panthers, actually. You'll remember that last year the Jackrabbits went into the West Gym and stunned Northern Iowa 25-13. If you do remember that, you might remember that it was a trio of Iowa natives, Johnston grad Zach Price and Henry Pohlmeyer, and then Albernette grad Tanner Sloan, that played starring roles that night. On Sunday, you and I went into Frost Arena and flipped the script. Thanks to 3 pins from Kyle Biscaglia at 33, Tristan Lair at 49, and Pat Schoenfelter at 65. Biscaglia actually pinned Zach Price, which was a massive turnaround after it was Price that beat him. I think it was 11-4 last year in the duel at the West Gym. Biscaglia actually had a takedown in the third period to lead 5-4, and then he was able to run a bar for the fall that put you and I up 9-0 right out of the gate after 2 matches. Tristan Lara connected on a headlock against Hunter Marco. It was a nasty headlock, guys. I mean, Marco just stood up and Lara went, see ya. That was also in the third period. That pin put up the Panthers up 15-3, and then Pat Schoenfelter looked aggressive, looked very hungry, he looked really good, guys. He racked up 6 takedowns, eventually stuck Kenny O'Neill to give you and I a 21-6 lead after the first 6 matches. Straight fire emoji from the Panthers right out of the gate against the Jackrabbits. Keegan Moore added 5 takedowns in an 18-7 major over Nick Kasperson to effectively ice the duel. The Panthers also got wins from Brody Teske. That was a wild one. He won a back-and-forth match over Danny Vega at 125 pounds. The final score was 13-11. Teske ended up winning it, but Vega actually led 8-1 after the opening minute. He scored a couple of takedowns and actually took Teske to his back all in the first 60 seconds or so, but Brody came right back, man. Escape, takedown, then he was able to get another takedown and 4 back points of his own, and he actually led 10-9 after the at the first period had ended. When I said it was crazy and back and forth, it was absolutely crazy and back and forth. Brody added a reversal in the second period, and then he scored an escape in the third period to ultimately win that one. Lance Runyon also won for the Panthers, won his Panther debut. Much more tame 4-0 decision. Lots of riding time for Lance Runyon to get that win at 174 pounds. South Dakota State got wins from Cade DeVos at 157 pounds. DeVos, two-time state champ from Southeast Polk. He beat Cade Lara 10-8. Cade Lara actually hit a headlock as well, and he led 6-2 in the first period. But DeVos, just so fundamentally sound. He came right back and just chipped away at it, scored a takedown and a turn in the second period, added a riding time point, got an escape somewhere in there, able to snag that one from Cade Lara 10-8. And then Tanner Sloan, again from Alburnett, junior world team member, recently just won the a U23 national title in freestyle as well. So we know this guy's really, really good. He soundly beat Tyrell Gordon 14-1 at 197 pounds. Plenty of Iowa natives still on the South Dakota State roster. Shout out to Cody Caldwell. The Jacks also got wins from Clay Carlson at 141. He beat Drew Bennett 8-2. And then Blake Walters beat John McConkie at heavyweight. That was 13-6. Walters looked like he was in line for a major decision, but then McConkie was able to score a takedown there in the third period to avoid giving the Jacks bonus. So that was the first duel. The next one against North Dakota State was a little bit more comfortable. Panthers ultimately won 7 of 10 matches in this second duel. Only 2 bonus point wins, but they were the bookends. Brody Teske, he got a pin over McGuire Midkiff to open at 125 pounds, and then Carter Isley closed the duel with a 41-second pin over 16th-ranked Brandon Metz at heavyweight. Isley's ranked 11th, so that's a really, really good win for him. Brandon Metz is a guy that's kind of been around for a while, so excellent stuff there from Isley to just, you know, not only come out explosive, get that quick first takedown, but then to be able to capitalize and keep Metz on his back and, get the Panthers out of there quickly, right? Those were kind of the only two super exciting matches. There was a lot of good action throughout this duel, but most of them were more of the workman-like ilk, right? Jack Skudlarzik, 4-0, win over a very game Kellen March at 133. Tristan Lair was able to score a late takedown to beat Jaden Van Manen, 4-2. Pat Schoenfelter, he beat Luke Weber, 7-2. Lance Runyon pitched another shutout, 7-0 over Riley Habich. 2 wins, 2 shutouts. Impressive stuff from Lance Runyon. Keegan Moore, 6-2 over TJ Pottinger. Those were the wins for the Panthers in that second duel. Bennett, Cade Lara, Tyrell Gordon, all drop matches in the second duel as well. They all went 0-2 on Sunday. Maybe those are the kind of the reasons for worry, which is a little bit tough. But the Panthers overall 2-0 after their first two competitions of the year, which is very exciting for those in Cedar Falls. I know the Rustlers, they were very excited, and so was head coach Doug Schwab. You heard him at the beginning of the podcast. We caught up with him this morning, actually, before I was able to record the freestyle, and got to chat with him a little bit about the duel. They didn't get back until later on Sunday, and so he was made available to talk this morning. So we got his thoughts on the duel, just kind of where they go from here, and if you could tell anything from the way he answered that first question at the top of the podcast, you know that he was very, very excited about what he was able to see on Sunday. Let's go to Doug now.
I guess good thing our team competed well, otherwise it would have been a real rough ride home. So obviously it was good to get back out competing again, and I think probably the thing that I was most happy with is that I think guys for the most part let it fly. And what I mean by that is, you know, we ask them to take risks and give ourselves opportunities, because as coaches, that's the only way we can really help them. If they don't do a whole lot and they stand around, and we don't really know what we can help them work on. So I thought guys took risks, gave themselves opportunities. You know, I think we showed that we have some pretty dang good depth at some weights. I got to get some things figured out, but those are good problems to have. I think we had 21 guys at least get one match or two matches in. And, you know, certainly a lot to build off of. You know, I was thinking a lot about this team and, obviously what they've been through. And, man, we talked about day one. I still remember the first Zoom call when we got together as a team. The first thing we talked about was that we'll come back out of this stronger. We'll be better. We will be better as a group. We'll be better individually. And hopefully a little bit of that showed yesterday, just in how guys were ready to compete. And I thought our shape was great. I thought our pace was great. You know, there's obviously going to be always things to work on, but from a starting point for me as a coach and for us as a team, I think it's a great place to jump off from. Like I said, you go kind of in depth a little bit with some of our guys, and we have some guys that have some serious stories, some character to them because of what they've been through and putting on that singlet, for a couple guys. I mean, Kate was in a Cade was in a hospital bed for a long time last year. You know, is he ever going to wrestle again? You know, is he going to get out of some of those things? And, you know, getting that guy back out there, a guy like Keegan Moore, he's been waiting a long time to put that UNI singlet on, you know, and, you know, you have a lot of things that I think went into the yesterday and a lot of, you know, for them, excitement. And, you know, for me, just as a coach and coaches, we, you know, we get to see where guys are at, what we have. Because you're kind of looking, you're like, you know, I see some good things, but, you know, you need to see how they compete. Like I think we had 5 pins in those matches. You know, getting bonus points is always a really good thing, and then putting guys away. But I just think from the guys open, they wrestled free, and if we can continue to do that, even if we get beat, we make mistakes. So what? But let's not pucker up, and you know the lights aren't too bright. They're certainly not. And I mean, I can kind of go up and down the lineup more, but. Said really good place to jump off from, I guess, if you guys got any questions. Well, the last thing I'll say is I had a mask on and my mask was up, but I was smiling the whole time. And it's a long time coming for us to compete again. And, you know, I think about all the guys that have missed opportunities and lost opportunities last year, and, you know, for whenever we get one, man, I'm just going to tell you, and I'm going to keep saying it, and you guys will probably get sick of hearing it, but I'm going to be grateful for every single opportunity that we get. And every time I get to lead my team into competition, man, I'm not going to take it for granted. I'm going to enjoy every bit of it. And all I ask is they put everything out, you know, for me, myself, the people that have come before them, and they did that yesterday. So, you know, looking forward to Sunday and wrestling 2 really quality teams.
Hey, Coach, Keegan talked last week at Media Day about how much he had to grow, not so much as a wrestler, but outside of the mat. What, can you explain a little bit, go more in depth with his journey and what's needed for to happen for him to put on the UNI singlet?
You know, guys all grow up at different times. And, you know, I mean, some guys get it right away, and some guys it takes a little bit longer. Sometimes things have to be taken from you to, you know, and there has to be a certain amount of pain. Sometimes it has to be involved before some of those adjustments and changes made. I can tell you this, for me as a coach, man, I believe in our guys 100%, and they're going to mess up. I mean, these guys are 18 to 22 year olds. You know, if we think that they're not going to make mistakes, and if we can't continue to believe in them and believe that they can't get through the other side and work through some of those things, then I'm not doing my job as far as I'm concerned. It's very easy. You know, you get a guy that does everything well and you pat him on the butt, and, you know, but, you know, you get those guys that get off the path. You help get them back. You help try to lead them back. They have to do it. And you know what? I'll tell you this last spring, he made the choice. He made the choice that, hey, how I'm going to talk to myself, what I'm going to feed myself with. And that means physically, that means mentally, that means spiritually, what he's putting in himself. That means the people that he's being around, the choices that he's making. He changed his life. And he's got to continue to do that. So the thing is, you know, you never really have it. And that's kind of been one of my things to my team is you never really have it now. You have to continue to renew. You have to continue to do the things that got you there and then double up on it. But, you know, he's grown so much as a person, as a man, and lifestyle things have changed. And those got to continue to happen. Hey, like I said, you got it. And, you know, I think he came to the right place. You know, he's worked through it, but man, he's had some people here. He has some coaches and that really truly believe in him as a person, not just as a wrestler. But sometimes you have to get over some things and you got to get some baggage off. And then, you know, you're able to really compete like you're capable of. I mean, cause he's got a ton of ability. And he's got to continue to work through those things, but it's been a long journey. You know, he told me it's been, you know, he's been waiting 3 years to put that singlet on, and man, he was so happy just to get that opportunity, and I was happy for him to get that opportunity. And now you continue to grow from there. But I mean, I'm not going to go into details as far as, you know, I mean, obviously outside of the room, man, you have to live well too, because it all bleeds in, and he's realized that. And sometimes it, except for some guys, it comes a lot quicker than others, but man, it's here right now, and he's just got to continue to do it. But really proud of the growth that I've seen out of him.
Thanks, Coach.
Hey, Coach. Russell, two different guys at 33 and heavy. What was kind of the decision to do that, just to kind of get, just to kind of see what you have in both guys, or what was the thought process?
Well, one of the weights, you know, we have certain rules, we have certain things that are in place that have to be followed or abided by. So sometimes you miss opportunities to compete. You know, so that's one of the weights. You know, one of them too, it's, we have two good guys there. You know, obviously they showed, but I mean, 33, they both beat, I think both those guys are ranked in the top 20, you know. I think Heck Price might have been in the top 10, you know, he had a really good first weekend. So it's something where they only, you know, Scuds was only going to be able to get one extra match, and I wanted to get guys to both two matches. We ended up only being able to get in one match because, you know, sometimes how those extra matches work is, you know, guys go through a couple matches and you're like, well, this guy kind of got dinged up here. And, you know, we did it too with a couple guys. You know, this guy got dinged up, so he's not going to wrestle that match. But I wanted to get both those guys matches. And we both, like I said, we have some very quality depth. Now for me, what's got to happen and what we've talked to our guys about is they have to continue to raise each other's level. You know, you can look at it as competition. Yeah, it is competition, but those guys are also your tools to improve. And man, if I take him out of the equation of someone to help me, then I'm missing a very great opportunity for me as a workout partner, or for me to get better. Because obviously they're going to know each other's wrestling very well. And, you know, you either get so good at something that it doesn't matter, or you continue to add to your wrestling. So I think both those guys have great opportunities to improve and get better. And, you know, you look at our schedule coming up, you know, for a lot of our guys, they're going to have opportunities to wrestle ranked guys and wrestle guys that, you know, that are going to help put those guys in the ranking. Because with a shortened season, I think it's very important that guys are able to get in the rankings, to get in the rankings quickly. You know, the process is going to be a little bit different this year. So, you know, we need to take advantage of every opportunity that we get. And you know, want to see those guys both out there twice. Unfortunately, like I said, Scuds was only going to go get the one match. But Bisco wrestled two. And, you know, we're going to continue to try to get as many possible matches for these guys as we can. I can tell you, when we have home duels, you know, we're going to have two mats going. And whoever wants to bring guys, bring them. Bring as many as you want. That, my administration might not appreciate that, but I mean, we'll take other schools too. I don't care. You know, you get your testing done, then let's wrestle. Let's get these guys as many opportunities as we can to compete. And you know, because some guys might only get a handful this whole year. So I know I'm going to continue to bring guys. And like I said, we'll have an open mat. We'll have an extra mat every duel that we have. Just to be able to run extra, you know, extra matches, but they count. They're still matches. They're still opportunities.
For sure. A lot of impressive performances over the first two duels. You know, I think five guys went undefeated, or at least five guys won both matches. You know, Lance didn't allow a point. Pat looked really aggressive. Brody looked like he got better from one match to the next. Was there one that stood out over the others in your mind?
You know, I thought a lot of good performances. I think guys kept their composure well, you know, took risk. You know, we gave up points, but I think in some of those situations, it was like, okay, I gave up some points, so what? I'm gonna wrestle to the next thing. And that's really one thing we've been working on, is you don't dwell on, I got scored on, or I got beat in this position. Okay, I get beat in this position. Now I got a little more information for the next time I get in there, or I got to make an adjustment. But, you know, for the first time out, I thought our shape looked very good. You know, I think if there was a struggle, it's, you know, maybe some nerves and nutritional that we have to continue to prove in and dial in on. I mean, running, if you don't give up any points, it's going to be real hard to beat you. You know, that's a good thing. You don't give up any points. But, you know, even on those extra matches, you know, I think Goldhofer went 3-0. You know, he beat Vega, you know, the South Dakota State starter, and looked really good doing it. He got better, you know, throughout the day. That guy tore his ACL last year, and this is his first competitions back out, you know. So, you know, I was really happy with that. And I was happy with, you know, those guys. And, you know, I think Capel won a couple matches, and, you know, a lot of guys on that other mat wrestled really well and wrestled hard. So, you know, we had 21 guys, and every 21 of the guys need to be doing that. And I thought guys did that. I don't know. I'm not going to give anyone that stuck out more than others. I know our team thought that the headlock that Tristan hit was we give an award after mates, and we give a sauce award, and they thought that was pretty saucy, and it was. I mean, that was a dirty headlock. And then his brother threw a left handed headlock the next match, and unfortunately didn't pin the guy. But you know, to me, that's just being creative. That's your wrestling. You know, it's not like we're sitting in guys. Those are things. That's something he's done from a long time, and that's what we're trying not to take away from guys. You know what, man? If you feel something, it's there. Take it and do it. And you know what? Let your wrestling be an expression of who you are. And some guys are going to be more aggressive. Some guys are going to be more tagging. Some guys are going to be more calculated. But man, we let that be an expression of who they are. And I think guys showed that the other day. So yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned a few of those guys. I thought Pat was a little more choosy in some of his attacks, which is good. You know, attacking when things are in line and where he needs to go. And when we went to something, he went through it. And it was some very good performances.
That was Northern Iowa's weekend. Again, very exciting, very successful start for the Panthers. Up next, though, a trip to Ames where they're going to wrestle both number 11 Arizona State and number 19 Missouri, but not the Cyclones. Welcome to the weirdness of a COVID wrestling season where both Iowa State and you and I are going to be in the same building, but they will not be wrestling each other, which is totally okay because these duels look like they're going to be a lot of fun. Arizona State, Iowa State, Missouri, you and I all in the same building for a weekend, and we get to see a lot of high-level wrestling there. These duels much tougher than what the Panthers saw this past weekend, so we should probably learn a little bit more about them next Sunday at Hilton Coliseum. Speaking of Hilton Coliseum, Ames, Iowa State, the Cyclones were back at Hilton this past Sunday. Two more duels against non-Division I opponents, and they thumped them both. Cyclones won 40-0 over Lawrence College. This is a budding Division III power, and then 38-4 over Nebraska Kearney, which is the number 3 ranked team, actually, in Division II. And honestly, guys, these were just two more tune-up duels. They were fairly lopsided because that's how they probably should have been. If they weren't, then we would probably be discussing these results a little bit more in depth. Ultimately, the Cyclones won 19 of 20 contested matches between the two duels. They had 12 total bonus points. You know, they had one pin, three major decisions, two technical falls against the Duhawks, which is Loris, if you're not familiar. And then they scored three more pins and three more major decisions in a 38-4 win over the Lopers, which is Nebraska Kearney. Still not exactly sure what a Loper is. I think it's a deer. If somebody knows, let me know, because that's, I'm just, you know, unique mascots. We're here for that, right? But hey, again, this was fairly straightforward. There were a few interesting things to come out of Sunday's duels. Let's start here. We'll just start at the top of the lineup. 125 pounds might be up for grabs, maybe? Question mark? Huge question mark. Even if only a little bit. Alex Mackel, two-time NCAA qualifier, and Kyson Terakina, who's the true freshman from Hawaii, they both got matches on Sunday. Terakina actually beat Mackel in a pretty close wrestle off earlier in the week, so they each got a match on Sunday. Mackel pinned Loris's Aiden Evans, who's originally from Bettendorf. Terakina beat Nebraska Kearney's top-ranked Josh Portillo 6-5 on a late third period takedown. Really good action in that match. Portillo probably sounds familiar because his brother Justin goes to Grandview, and Josh at Nebraska Kearney is currently, they both went to Clarion Goldfield Dows, and as far as I know, he's currently the number one ranked 125-pounder Division II. So excellent stuff there from Terakina. The spot at 165 pounds might become up for grabs soon. Isaac Judge again got the nod after losing to Wartburg Zane Mulder last week. In the first duel against Loris's Baylor Krieger, he opened up quite a bit. He looked pretty good, 19-5 major decision, but then he turned around and he lost to Nebraska Kearney's Matt Malcolm 13-4. Not a bad loss by any means, because Malcolm, former Iowa wrestler, now he's at Nebraska Kearney. He won a Division II national title in 2019, looked like he was going to maybe do it again last year before COVID. This is another Iowa native. He went to Glenwood. If people are, you know, why does that name sound familiar? That's why. Good stuff out of Matt Malcolm. He looked really good. Isaac Judge, again, 1-2 to start. Clearly, he's still the guy in the room. The other guy at 165, maybe Grant Stotts could usurp him a little bit, but you know, they're doing wrestle offs every Thursday, and we saw at 25 that you know, if there is a if there are split results in the Russell office, Dresser's not afraid to give one guy one match and one guy another match. So clearly Isaac Judge maybe has Grant Stott's number. I don't know. Maybe that'll change ahead of next weekend. Just kind of something to monitor. This is just that's going to look like it's going to be that weight this year that just it might be a little bit in flux while everybody else seems mostly set in stone. So yeah, 25-65, hard decisions might soon be made at both 184 and 197. I mean, I think we kind of knew this, right? Just by the way that, you know, the Cyclones kind of operated in the early portion of this season. Tate Battani has held down 184 quite well, while Joel Shapiro and Sam Colbury both worked their way back from various injuries. Battani went 2-0 on Sunday. He beat Loras College's Shane Ligel 7-6. Shane Ligel's pretty good, guys. So that was, it was nice to kind of see Tate really kind of battle mentally and, you know, put enough distance because he gave up a late takedown in the third period. But he had enough distance between the two to ultimately win that one. And then he bounced back real nicely against Nebraska Kearney's Hayden Price, 12-2 win there. Dresser said to expect Shapiro back maybe by the end of the month, and then we could see Colbrey in some form of action by next weekend maybe. So that's going to be something to monitor. Dresser did say that he's going to make both Shapiro and Colbrey go through Russell-offs. In order to take the spot from Battani. But right now, Tate's the guy at 184 for the time being still. And it sounded like, you know, he's probably going to get the matches next week against Arizona State and Missouri. And so that could really tell us a lot about where Tate Battani really stands when it comes to, you know, the greater picture at 184 pounds. At 197, Younger Bastida, another true freshman. I don't really group him with the rest of the true freshmen because he's something like 21 years old. But he is from Cuba. He is a first-year college student. He continued his impressive transition from freestyle to folkstyle on Sunday, notched an 18-8 win over Loras' Brady Vogel, who is pretty good. You know, and then he ended, and then Bastida ended up scoring a first period pin over Nebraska Kearney's Joseph Reimers, who didn't know a lot about, didn't really discover a whole lot while I was kind of Googling his name. I was kind of doing that with a lot of, you know, Loras's guys, Nebraska Kearney's guys, at least the names I didn't know, just to try and see, you know, hey, like what is these guys' resume, right? Like how impressive are some of these wins? But Bastida, two more wins, looked pretty solid. The other thing to note here at 97 is that Marcus Coleman also wrestled on Sunday. He was in the B duel. He only got one match, but I mean, he scored a second period pin. He was up 12-1 at the time of the pin. It was one of Loras's backup guys or one of their depth guys, so maybe not a lot to learn from that, but it was nice to see him back on the mat. He looks real comfortable at 197, so he will eventually wrestle off Bastida for that spot. I don't know if that's going to be this week or next week. Dresser said that he's probably moving a little bit quicker than Shapiro and Colbrey, but you know, we'll see when that time comes when Marcus will get a legit shot to perhaps get his starting spot back. Progress was made a little bit at 174 pounds. Julian Broderson, he lost to Wartburg's Kyle Briggs last week. Kyle Briggs, really good wrestler. I didn't really think that that was a terrible loss, just kind of watching it and looking at it and seeing how it unfolded. But Julian Broderson looked really, really good on Sunday, guys. Notched a pair of decision victories, 6-2 over Loras' Jacob Krakow, who's quite good, and then 9-2 over Nebraska Kearney's Terrell Garraway. One of his takedowns was actually, I'm sure you guys saw the video by now, that insane headlock where he took Garraway literally through the air on his way to the takedown on the mat. Very, very impressive stuff. Air Broderson ready for liftoff, right? The true freshman, I know I said I don't really group Bastida with these guys, even though he is technically a true freshman by eligibility standards, but Zach Redding and Cam Robinson also continued their impressive starts. You know, Zach Redding might actually be the guy at 133 this year, guys. You know, another thing the Dresser said was that Todd Small was working his way down, so he'll eventually make his way through the wrestle-off process, so we'll see if Redding can hold it. But he won twice more on Sunday. Couple of close matches this time, not nearly as dominant as he was last week, but maybe a little bit tougher competition. He won 7-0 over Loras' Zach Licht, and then a 7-5 sudden victory thriller over Nebraska Kearney's Wesley Dawkins, who is considered the number two ranked 133-pounder in Division II. Cam flashed a little bit of dominance and resolve in some of his matches. Opened up a 16-5 major decision over Loras' Zeke Smith. And then he showed some mental strength. This is what I meant by the resolve. 9-7 win over Nebraska Kearney's Sam Turner. Robinson actually trailed 5-2 in the first period, but he battled back to lead 7-5. Turner leveled the match at 7-all, and then Robinson scored a real slick takedown. He was trying to kind of like, he was working against a wizard, but he was trying to throw his leg in to get that two in that funky position, but Turner wasn't having it, so they squared back up, and right as Turner stood up, Cam dropped down, picked his ankle, and was able to score the winning takedown in those final seconds. That was really nice to see, and honestly, that's a really good win, because Sam Turner, this might sound familiar to a few people, He's a two-time NCAA qualifier for Wyoming, Division I qualifier. So now he's back home at Nebraska Kearney. He's a real tough customer. That was a really, really good win, I thought, for Cam Robinson. You can look at these two duels results in a few different ways, in kind of the same way I said after the Wartburg duel last week. I'm going to view them as this, though. You know, Iowa State considered a top 10 Division I program, and they thumped three pretty good lower tier wrestling programs over the last 2 weeks. That's good. That's what you want to see from a top 10 Division I program, right? But now it's time to really kind of see what these guys are made of. This is something that Iowa State coach Kevin Dresser alluded to immediately after this duel. We'll get that opportunity next week. The Cyclones, again, they're hosting Arizona State and Missouri. You and I is going to be there to wrestle both the Sun Devils and the Tigers. That should be a much more revealing couple of duels than what these last couple of weeks have really told us about the Cyclones this season. Very ho-hum expected day out of the Cyclones overall. They're 3-0 now, and nobody should complain about that. These duels were definitely tune-ups for the big show that starts next week and is going to continue through the rest of January and into February. We caught up with Iowa State coach Kevin Dresser. Those were kind of his thoughts afterwards, but I'll let you guys hear them in full, you know, kind of what he thought about the last couple of weeks and his team's performance on Sunday. Here you go.
I thought, you know, we got another week under our belt of weighing in and competing, and it's time to definitely step it up now. And, you know, I think it's a perfect time for us to see where we're at. Arizona State, Missouri will really show us how far we've came and how far we've developed. And I think our guys are real excited about that. So I'll open it up for questions with that said.
Second week in a row, Cam has looked pretty comfortable out there for a true freshman. And that was a pretty good kid he beat from Nebraska Kearney. What'd you see from him, and what overall have you seen from him this first 2 weeks?
No, I think he's done a great job. I think you nailed it in that he had a really good opponent there. You know, that was a Division I guy for most of his career, and now he's finished his career at Division II. So the separation is minimal. So no, he was good. He's you know, getting more consistent, and that's a consistent. The freshmen usually aren't in the same sentence. So you know, we got to continue to progress this week. There's a lot of areas that not only him, that I think we can just get better at wrestling, and that's kind of going to be the focus of this week, is just getting better wrestling. And Cam probably falls in that, but that's what this time of year is about, is coming back and tweaking each week. And you know, we need to do a really good job as coaches this week. It's kind of on us right now to get us ready.
You like, you saw progress from Broderson today too?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think you saw that he lost to a good guy last week and made a couple technical mistakes, and I think he fixed him this week. You know, he was a little bit more deliberate in the bottom and wasn't rolling around, and that's what happened to him last week. He learned from his mistakes, and really that's what you're looking for. He was more solid, and he had some guys who were pretty good on top again this week. So, yeah, he's going to get more comfortable each week. He's done a really good job with his weight because he hasn't been this low for, you know, a couple of years in his life, and he's really managed that well and has good energy, and you know, just continues to get better at wrestling. Obviously, you can see he's pretty tough on top.
What do you see from some of the other young guys? I mean, Kyson fills in for Alex Mackel and the A team, and he gets his first win, and then obviously Zach Redding as well. What do you see from them?
Well, it's just, again, some good young guys. I mean, if you look at Redding and you look at Tarakina and you look at Younger and you look at Cam Robinson, there's some guys that have some big upside right now. And, you know, I thought it was good. Kyson beat a really good guy. I think, I don't know if he's a defending D2 national champ, but I know he's ranked number one in D2 right now. That's a fifth-year senior. I think all those guys wrestled, you know, guys that are fourth or fifth year of college wrestling. So that's, you know, you kind of throw out sometimes when somebody's that old and been around the sport that much at the college level, you kind of throw out D1s and D2s and D3s at that point. So I think that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how those guys progress as we get into this next level of competition. I'm really curious to see how they compete here.
We talked about Younger a lot earlier this week, but I mean, today he has 8 takedowns in the first match and then pins the guy in the second match.
Yeah.
What have you seen from him?
Yeah, I think you see a tremendous amount of athleticism. You see a guy that's still trying to figure out the rules. You see a guy that's still you know, trying to figure out just the difference between freestyle and folk style. And so the exciting part is the athleticism's there, and he's really excited about, you know, getting better. And, you know, he's just had to adjust to so much in 45, 50 days. It's crazy, you know, just the learning curve, everything from, you know, getting to understand English and everything from the way we train to the way that you get down to weight. And he's pulled off a lot. So there's a big upside there. You know, we're going to take some lumps there. We know that. He's going to have to wrestle off here once we get Coleman back healthy. So that'll be an interesting weight as well.
For a guy who's probably used to a touch fall, I imagine that hold there in that second match was probably a little goofy for him.
Yeah, that was like a 75-second count pin. So that's a lot quicker than a touch fall.
How impressed were you with Cam and Kyson being able to get those third period and extra period takedowns to win their matches?
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, you put a true freshman out there and they figure out how to beat an upperclassman in the last period. I think that's a testament to them, and it's a testament to their shape and their conditioning. Those guys work hard in the room, and that's generally when you win big matches is late. And so it's probably a sign of they're pretty confident in their conditioning.
Now, I guess I was thinking of asking, you know, how do you feel with Isaac Judge's performance today? What's the conversation like once you guys got back in the locker room?
Well, we haven't conversed yet. You know, Isaac works real hard. You know, we just have to figure out, you know, we got to get a guy to step up at 165. Either him or Stotts need to step up and just kind of let it fly a little bit. They're got to get more confidence in their abilities. They've got the abilities. It's just, you know, we need somebody to step front and center at that weight, because that's, you know, a weight we're struggling at a little bit right now. So, you know, welcome to the big time. You know, everybody wants to get in the lineup. And then when you get in the lineup, you find out it's a jungle out there a little bit. And so you gotta figure it out.
One other thing from the Iowa State Sunday, their tri meet on Sunday. I know not many of us are paying close attention to these B duels, and nor should we really. But there was a pretty cool moment during the Iowa State Loris B duel this weekend. Ethan Anderson locked up a first period pin over Wyatt Reed, and I'm sure some people know this, but that was actually a rematch of the 2016 Class 3A state finals, where Reed won a thriller 12-10 at 220 pounds to win the state title that year. Anderson was something of a prodigious talent coming out of high school. He won 184 matches and two state titles for Southeast Polk. So if his name sounds familiar, that's probably why. He made the Cadet Greco-Roman World Team in 2014, and he won a bronze medal at the Cadet Pan American Greco Championships in 2015. He was a top 100 recruit in the 2016 recruiting class, and he actually decided on Oklahoma State after coming out of high school. And it looked like, you know, just kind of looking at that lineup and, you know, the way things were shaking out, he perhaps was going to be the starting heavyweight as a redshirt freshman in 2017. But he got beat out, and he ultimately decided to transfer home after the 2017-18 season for a number of different reasons. His father, Robert, passed away in March of that year. He was only 45 years old, and Ethan also grew up an Iowa State fan, and by then, Dresser and his staff had already settled in at Ames and were, you know, promising this rebuild that has now unfolded over the last couple of years. You know, so Anderson decided he needed to come home, and it was not a simple transition, right? I mean, Anderson went from, you know, potentially being the guy at Oklahoma State with, you know, a bunch of rich tradition history. But Anderson, he backed up Gannon Grimmel while he came back his first year. He went 12-8 overall in some of the matches that he was able to get. You know, and then he took all of last season off completely. He was not on the roster. He decided he was done wrestling. He went back home. He was burnt out, and he was just kind of ready to move forward and do something else, right? But something compelled him to come back. And I'm not going to claim to know what it was, and I'm not going to claim to know why he decided to return. And I haven't really asked him to, you know, I haven't talked to him to ask about that. But here he is again on the mat, a senior determined to give it another go. He's a little buried on the Cyclones roster right now, more kind of a depth piece than anything else. But he's wrestled twice this season, and he's won them both. He won 13-4 over Wartburg's Eli Panel last week, and then this week scored a pin over Wyatt Reed. He was excited walking off the mat at Wharton afterwards, just all smiles and high fives. It was a really neat little redemptive moment. I know I tweeted about it, and there were a couple other people sitting around me that thought it was really, really cool to kind of see him, you know, really just kind of enjoy wrestling again, right? And so I asked Coach Dresser, you know, if he saw the match and if he knew kind of what that meant to Ethan. And to my surprise, he actually said he did see the match. He caught it out of the corner of his eye. But then, you know, he talked about how Ethan really kind of has a little bit left more to give when it comes to his wrestling. Here's my full question. I'll lay down the audio for you guys. My full question and Dresser's full answer on Ethan Anderson and his performance on Sunday.
Ethan Anderson has had one heck of a journey when it comes to wrestling, just from, you know, losing in the state finals in a thriller as a senior. You know, I think he was originally committed to Mizzou. He was down at Oklahoma State, then he came back home, and then he took a year off, and now he's back. And pretty neat little redemptive moment, I thought, for him on Sunday, just, you know, beating who he beat and how he beat him, and he was clearly excited. How cool was that maybe for you to see, if you were able to see it, and just kind of what has it meant maybe to him more than to you guys to just be back in the room?
Yeah, I did get to see it out of the corner of my eye, and I was glad for him. You know, he came to me early in the week and said, hey, I want to wrestle this guy for this reason. You know, he beat me in the state finals. And so Francis Dugan's just getting back in the lineup. I didn't think he was ready for two matches, and he's actually the number two guy there. So I felt like this was an opportunity to get Ethan, I guess, some revenge in his world. And so I could tell he was pretty excited about it. And, you know, he's done a good job for us in the room. He's provided us some depth. And, you know, if the guy can push himself, continue to push himself a little bit more, you know, he's not a bad wrestler at all. He could really progress. So hopefully that might have been a spark for him to get in there and compete hard, you know, for that spot.
I thought that moment was pretty cool, guys. Ethan Anderson's story is not unlike a bunch of other great wrestlers who ultimately burn out and decide to go do something else with their lives, right? But it's really cool to see him back, really cool to see him competing, and more than anything, really, really cool just to see him having fun again. Okay, last part of this week's freestyle. We've got some high school wrestling stuff to catch up on. Pretty busy weekend in Iowa high school wrestling. I actually made the trip to Dubuque to watch the Hempstead duels, which featured number 9 Hempstead, number 6 Ankeny, number 2 Southeast Polk, and number 1 Waverly Shell Rock. About 90 minutes west, Benton Community held its annual Jerry Eckenrod Invitational, which featured the Class 2A number 1 West Delaware, Class 1A number 1 Don Bosco, Class 3A number 3 Waukee, and a host of other talented teams and individuals. We'll run through just both of those real quick. Those are really kind of the big events that stuck out, and I had a lot of thoughts on the action, right? Okay, to start, Southeast Polk had a heck of a week, right, guys? They beat Don Bosco last Saturday, 34-33, in a duel that came down to the final match. 2 days later, they beat Waukee by the exact same score, only because it got to the 9th criteria tiebreaker, right? And then they had to travel 3 hours east to wrestle 3 more top 10 teams. No rest for the weary, right? What a story it would have been had the Rams run the gauntlet unscathed, but they met their match over the weekend. They beat Hempstead 62-15, and then they beat Ankeny 43-21, but then the top-ranked Gohawks took down mighty Southeast Polk 36-28 to cap a thrilling day of competition. The Hempstead duels were revealing for a number of reasons. Chief among them, I thought at least, was that there were 4 of Class 3A's top 10 teams there, and as many as 30 ranked competitors, including 17 that were ranked 3rd or better at their respective weight. Lots of firepower there, guys. I mean, just kind of, you know, at 120 pounds, each of the top 3 wrestlers were there. 26, 32, 82, and 220 all had 2 of the top 3 ranked wrestlers there, and 152 had 3 of the top 4. Lots of firepower, like I was saying. The results, for the most part, lived up to the hype, too. Aiden Riggins stole the show. Junior from Waverly Shell Rock, he actually beat Ankeny's Caleb Rachi 9-8 and Southeast Polk's Carson Martinson, 20-7. Went 3-0 on the day at 152 pounds. He entered the weekend ranked 3rd at the weight. Rachi was ranked 1st. Martinson was ranked 4th. Riggins, he also notched his 100th career win in the process. So many others hit that milestone over the week and weekend as well, which was pretty cool to see. A lot happened at 120 pounds. Number 1 Bailey Roybal from Waverly Shell Rock, number 2 Trevor Anderson from Ankeny, and then number 3 Chad Bellis from Hempstead. Anderson beat Roybal 6-5, and then Roybal beat Bellis 6-3. Anderson and Bellis didn't end up wrestling, unfortunately, because in the Ankeny Southeast Polk duel, Southeast Polk's Nate Jessaroga, who's ranked number 1 at 113 pounds and nationally ranked at 106 still, he bumped up to 120 and beat Trevor Anderson 3-2 in another thriller, right? When I say firepower, guys, I mean firepower. That's how much fun Dubuque was on Saturday. The unfortunate part about that match, though, was that Anderson hurt his shoulder along the way. It looked like, you know, Jesse Rogan in the third period, they were doing a lot of hand tying and hand fighting and just hanging on the head and shoulders and whatnot. And You know, it looked like Jesse Rogge was trying to just hit a shrug, and I don't know if he did it with enough force or if it was just, you know, wrong place, wrong time, unfortunate or whatever the case may be. He looked like Anderson hurt his shoulder on the sequence. He ultimately sat out the last round when Ankeny dueled Hempstead. Hate to see that from any competitor, but especially the top flight guys who, you know, just throw it out on the line the way that these guys did all day. I really hope Trevor's okay moving forward, because I know that he's got big goals, obviously, not just with regards to the state championships coming up next month, but I mean, he's obviously got much bigger wrestling goals in mind as well. So I hope he's okay moving forward. Tons of other fun individual matchups, though, in Dubuque. Waverly Shell Rock's Ryder Block, who a state champ at 106 last year. Now he's up at 132 this year. He beat Southeast Polk's Aiden Kingery 14-7. That was a top three matchup. Caleb Rachi came back with a strong 21-12 win over Carson Martinson. Hempstead's Adler Kramer beat Ankeny's Kale Cox 5-1. Those guys are both ranked in the top three at 126 pounds. You know, but that match actually took place at 132, so I think they're both waiting for their weight descent to go down to allow them to get down to 26. And then 182 pounds, Waverly Shell Rock's second-ranked McCray Haggerty, who is literally the strongest human being I think I've ever seen, just visually. The guy looks like he sleeps in the weight room. He soundly beat Southeast Polk's third-ranked Aiden Grimes 15-6. Again, that's 182 pounds, number two versus number three. The distance on Saturday was 9 points. The one match we didn't get to see that would have been a lot of fun was the potential Luke Walker-Caleb Runyon match. Walker from Waverly Shell Rock, number one at 220. Runyon from Southeast Polk's number two. But when the Rams and Gohawks wrestled, Walker accepted a forfeit, and then Runyon bumped up to heavyweight to score a pin, trying to make up a little bit of ground there in the duel by that point. Maybe we'll see it next month. I don't know. Be a lot of fun, right? Speaking of next month, the one thing that Saturday in Dubuque really did reveal was that until proven otherwise, Waverly Shell Rock looks every bit like they're the team to beat in Class 3A. Gohawks ultimately won 8 of 14 bouts against Southeast Polk, and they had a lot of bonus along the way. They had that one forfeit, but they also had two more pins, and they had three major decisions. The duel was one thing, but these Gohawks look every bit like the part of a, from a tournament perspective as well. Lots of depth, lots of firepower. You know, this is a team that has prided itself on its bonus point barrage the last couple of years at the state championships, and that's what's led to the last two Class 3A state team titles for the Gohawks. Of their 10 ranked wrestlers, 7 of them are 5th or better. Many of them look like they could be potential finalists on the right day, right? So Southeast Polk, Waukee, Iowa City West, Fort Dodge, a lot of teams are going to have a say in how, you know, February is ultimately going to be decided when we get to Wells Fargo Arena. But consider the Gohawks the favorites for now. Very, very impressed watching those guys compete on Saturday. One more cool thought from Dubuque. Waverly Shell Rock, when they got back home on Saturday night, Joe's Nighthawk, the restaurant, bar, lounge, storytelling haven that's in Waverly, they actually redid their sign outside to honor the Gohawks' win over Southeast Polk, because it was the first time in a long time that they were finally able to knock off the Rams. That was a rematch of the last two state duels championship matches, both of them won by Southeast Polk. So Waverly definitely excited. The community, the Waverly Shell Rock community, the Gohawk community, super, super excited about that result on Saturday. Only in wrestling-crazed Iowa, man. I thought that was really, really cool. West Delaware, run through this tournament real quick. They won the Jerry Eckenrod invite at Benton on Saturday. 60-plus ranked wrestlers and a ton of really, really good teams. But it was the Hawks that emerged victorious, the number one team in Class 2A. They scored 245.5 points to beat out Waukee by just 5 points. Waukee, number 3 in 3A, they only scored 240.5. Both of those guys finished ahead of Don Bosco, who took third with 214. Then you had Independence, Fort Dodge, Assumption all fall in line at 4th, 5th, and 6th. Thrilling team race between West Delaware, Waukee, and Don Bosco. West Delaware and Waukee both had 10 top 5 finishers. Don Bosco had 8. The Hawks and the Dons both had 4 champs, while Waukee had 3, but the Warriors also had 3 other finalists. And Waukee, actually, one more final point on this team race. Waukee had the most bonus points of the three teams, with 63.5 bonus points by my math. West Delaware had 61.5, and then Don Bosco put up about 50 or so. Important to note here, that Waukee's Connor Kelly, who's a returning state medalist, he's also the starting 26-pounder, he did not wrestle. His points probably could have swayed the tournament in Waukee's favor. Don Bosco was also without Cade Tenold at 170 pounds. He's a returning state finalist who probably could have had an impact for the Dons too, right? But the guys that did wrestle put on one heck of a show. Waukee's lightweight duo, Carter Freeman at 106 and Koufax Christensen at 113, they both combined for 4 pins, and they both took first. Freeman had 2 pins, and then Christensen also had two pins, right? And then they won. They both won pretty decisively, or pretty handily, I should say, in their finals matches. Really fun final at 120 pounds where Don Bosco's Garrett Funk, he beat Benton Community's Jaden Moore 6-5. Both of those guys were teammates at Don Bosco last year, and both of them were state medalists as a part of Don Bosco state championship team. So that was kind of neat to see. Independence Brandon O'Brien, class 3A state finalist at 106 pounds last year. He's also up at 132 this season, and he's looked really, really good, guys. He improved to 24-0 this year. He won Benton on Saturday. He had two pins and a technical fall, and then he beat Waukees Thurman Christensen 2-0 in the final. Waukees Cole Ferguson, lots of finalists for the Warriors, man. These guys are, this is the first time I finally get to see them in a major tournament setting. Very impressed. Waukees Cole Ferguson, he looks like one of the best guys at 138 this season, guys. This past week, he beat Carter Martinson from Southeast Polk. He beat Owen Helgeson from Johnston. Those guys are ranked number 2 and number 4, respectively, at the weight in Class 3A. And then on Saturday, he finished first with wins over Centerville's Nathaniel Ginobana, who's a 3-time state finalist, and then he beat Independence's Isaiah Weber, who's a 2-time state finalist, in the finals. Ferguson led that match 11-2 before Weber injury defaulted, so I hope he's okay. And then this is where West Delaware really took off. 145 pounds on up. That's where the Hawks rolled. Jaden Payton, Jared Voss, Wyatt Voker, Carson Petlon, those are your four champs from West Delaware at 152, 170, 195, and 285. Then Logan Payton got to the finals at 145, and then you had Kale Meyer at 82 and Christian Nunley at 220. They both took third for West Delaware. Those seven wrestlers alone combined for about 71% of West Delaware's total team points, and then both Voker and Petlon pinned their way to gold, so there's a ton of bonus points there. Jared Voss also hit a splatel to score a pin in the quarterfinals, and we love splatels, so I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. And then at 182 pounds, we had two number one ranked wrestlers meet up, which I think maybe didn't get as much love as it probably deserves, right? So we had Don Bosco's Carson Tenold, who's number one in 1A, against Waukees Griffin Gamel, who is number one in 3A. Tenold ultimately won that one 4-3. Gamel led 3-1 after a takedown. With about 90 seconds left in the match, but then Tenold went escape, takedown in the span of like 6 seconds and was able to ride Gamel out to win. In thrilling match, thrilling tournament, honestly. Tournaments like Benton have been few and far between this year, which really stinks, but that's just, again, COVID season. Things are weird, right? You know, we just don't get a lot of tournaments that feature the combination of teams and individuals that are, you know, fierce teams, deep teams, high-powered teams, and days like Saturday are, they're so much fun when we're able to see tournaments like that and get to watch all these things unfold. One more interview here for the freestyle before I sign off. Actually caught up while I was in Dubuque, caught up with Waverly Shell Rock head coach Eric Whitcomb about his team's performance, specifically about Aiden Riggins' individual performance, and then just kind of really talked about how the Gohawks are feeling after beating three top 10 teams and then especially getting that win over Southeast Polk on Saturday in Dubuque. So here's Waverly Shell Rock head coach Eric Whitcomb on the Gohawks and their performance on Saturday and where they go from here.
Well, hey, Eric Whitcomb, head coach Waverly Shell Rock, 3-0 today over Hempstead, Ankeny, and Southeast Polk. That does that feel nice knowing that they've been able to get the best of you guys each of the last couple years?
Yeah, that, I mean, it's been a long time since we took a duel from them. I don't really want to count how long probably. So, you know, ultimately, it's a mid-season battle. Whatever that means, but it certainly does feel good, getting one against them, and it's been a long time.
Yeah, how nice is it just a day like today, right, where you get Polk, you get Ankeny, you get Hempstead, you're able to wrestle high-quality opponents like this in a year where maybe that's not always possible, right?
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, our schedule, I think our schedule rivals about anyone, in the state, maybe country, I don't know, but in a typical year,
yeah,
and we haven't had that, and so today coming in and having those really high level matchups, I knew it'd be valuable. I knew it would be, we'd be exposed in some places. You know, our first duo of freshmen looked like freshmen. that first time, like there's something more than on the line, and so we need those days to get them to where they need to be in February. So we were just really excited about that opportunity, and you know, we'll take from it and continue to build. So, but I liked our guys' efforts.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, 3-0. I mean, we mentioned the Polk win, but, you know, pretty sound wins over Hempstead and Ankeny, who are two tough teams, top 10 teams. What was maybe the ultimate takeaway from today?
You know, I just look at, like, our individuals and how do they progress throughout the day. And you look at guys like Aiden Riggins.
What a day.
just looks so dominant. And, you know, Ratchie is an excellent high school wrestler. Great battle. But, you know, that's what makes wrestling fun. It's not avoiding those matchups. Or, I mean, the kids need to wrestle those matches. And, you know, the fans need those matches. And so that was exciting to see that. But just looking at our individual performances, you know, how they get better throughout the day. You know, hey, you just had Cole Thompson at 170. His first match today looked pretty freshman-like. And come back against, you know, the fifth or sixth ranked kid from Oak and put together a pretty good match. Still things you got to get better at, but
yeah,
certainly a different level match from the first match of the day. So happy to see our progress and happy to see the guys, you know, raise their intensity level as the stakes got higher.
Yeah, a guy like Riggins, 3-0 today at a weight that's stacked, right? He sees, you know, two of the other top four guys at his weight. When you think about him and, like, the, you know, in the class that he's in, does he maybe get forgotten about a little bit just because, you know, maybe he hasn't won a title yet and, you know, you guys are kind of tucked up in Waverly and maybe a lot of us don't see him all the time?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Aiden Riggins is a pretty well-known name across the state. And, you know, he kind of said, he goes, "Hey, coach, I want this match." He goes, "If I win this match, you know, it does a lot for me."
Yeah.
And he goes, I just think I'm better.
Yeah.
And so and that's a bold statement to make against a great kid like Caleb. But you got to be excited as a coach when you're saying, hey, you know, your kid's like, "I want the number 7 kid at 152 in the country."
Yeah.
And I want to wrestle him, and I think I can beat him, you know. So that's just kind of the way Aiden's been. And he hasn't won a state title yet. I don't know if that's the most important thing to date right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's something that he said, just kind of, you know, focus more on effort than outcome, right?
Right, yep, for sure. And today in that match, you know, he finally started putting together 6 minutes of some things that we knew. And I told him afterwards, I just said, you know, finally, we've kind of taken that step in executing all the things that we know how to do and we've been able to do. Today was a big step for him in executing for 6 minutes.
100%. I think the other thing that sticks out about your team is, you know, 82, 95, 220. That is a mean trio of dudes that you guys have got there.
It is. And the fun thing about that is two of them are sophomores. You know? So that's exciting to think about, too. But you know, when your upper weights is as strong as ours are right now, that's a different element. You know, kind of look at it like being, you know, having a 6-13 that are really good. You know, just there's a lot of opportunity to score a lot of points in there.
So. Yeah, 100%. 3-0 today, very clearly the number one team in Class 3A. You got anything else for me, Coach?
You know, back to the drawing board and let's keep it better. And should be exciting February.
That's all we've got today for the Weekend Freestyle. Thanks a bunch for listening, you guys. A little bit longer than normal, but I hope you all really enjoyed it. Be sure to catch future episodes of In the Room on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to rate and review on wherever you listen. 5 stars and kind words in the review sections, please. Follow your boy on Twitter at Cody Goodwin or Instagram at Cody J. Goodwin. Always love communicating with you guys. And be sure to also subscribe to the Des Moines Register to catch all my stories, mailbags, analysis, and videos. You can find links to do all of that in the show notes. That's it for this episode. Thanks again for listening. We will talk again soon, guys.
My Steelers hat on. Yeah, I'm a loyal fan. You stick with your team no matter what, even though that was pretty rough. And then make it worse is Cale Happel's a Browns fan. Hey, he's actually a true Browns fan. That's the first one I found.